Hello, and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend, where we go behind the scenes and talk to the creators of independent entertainment. I'm Jason Godby, and with me in the Rabbit Hole studio today is a talented filmmaker slash actress, Miss Julia Campanelli.
Hi, how are you, Jason?
Hey, nice to see you. Did I get your name right?
You did get it right. Thank you very much.
I'm trying.
Did you practice that?
in the mirror five times before I came here.
I appreciate it.
So thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for schlepping to Brooklyn.
Thank you for having me. This is a treat on a Friday.
It's always a pleasure to have people who are within, I guess we're in the inner circle here, because I'm doing it's like a 6 degrees of Richard LeMay.
Yes.
And so far we've had Richard on the show. We've had Jeremiah Kipp on the show.
Dan Pipeline on the show.
Dan and Caitlin from Pipeline.
Yes.
Also Adonis, who did the score.
Adonis, yes.
So lots of folks.
Similar 1 degree.
I just got to start giving Adonis a producer credit.
I'll take it.
Anyway, let's talk about you, since you're the one here and you're looking fabulous. So let's jump right into it. You started out as an actor. Turned filmmaker.
Yes.
What is your origin story? How did this come about?
Well, I actually started out in theater. I moved to New York to do theater because that's what you did almost 30 years ago when I moved to New York City and did theater. And as a young actress in the business, I became very frustrated with the roles that were available to me or being offered to me. It was arm candy or it was a prostitute pretty much across the board. So I quit acting and I started a theater company that was dedicated to original work by or about women. It was called Shelter Theater Group. And I did that for about 6 years. Then I always wanted to work in film. I'm fascinated by film. It's so magical. It's just so, I love the element of film. But as a child, I never saw any women behind the scenes. And my parents were in theater and we would watch films together. And we would talk about, you know, who makes them and who's the best director and who's the best this and cinematographer. And I never saw any women. So I did not think that film behind the camera as a career was a viable career choice for a woman. So I became an actress because I just wanted to work in film. And I did work in film. I did television and film in New York City. And then, as I said, I stopped and started directing and producing and writing for theater. But film just brought me back in, and I put the theater company on hiatus, and then I went to film school here in the city, in Manhattan, at the New School, and that was it. I mean, that was it. So then I was on my way.
You fell in love.
I was always in love. So it was just, I gained the tools with which to create film, and I really loved it. But I graduated in 1999, and there were very few women in my class. I was the only woman in my cinematography class, and I was sort of a token. I was a token. So there was a lot of, it wasn't conducive to learning at that time for women. Now there are many more women in film schools. So that's how I got started in film. And it wasn't until 3 years ago that I actually made my first professional film, and that was my short film, 116. That is currently on the festival circuit. It has been for 11 months now, has played in over 45 festivals and has won 18 awards. And I still have some festivals through the end of this year.
Fabulous, fabulous. Yeah, I mean, I was saying too, I just had a guest here who won, she just won Best Feature at the Soho International Film Festival.
That's wonderful. And, that's hard to do.
It was a pretty competitive thing.
Very.
And I was telling her that I've had a lot of women in film on the show. And if it keeps up, I'm going to have to.
Kudos to you.
I'm thinking.
As a gender, we thank you.
Just on behalf of everyone. No, I think it's cool. And, you know, my philosophy is if you can't beat them, join them.
Yes.
You know, like.
Or invite them in.
Why not?
Invite them to the table.
And, you know, we had a great discussion about, like, little things that were in her movie that maybe I never would have thought to put in a movie.
Yes.
You know, it's not because.
It's a different perspective.
It is a different perspective. And I think we need it. I think it's good. And. You know, if it appeals to you, great. If it doesn't, don't watch. It's, you know, I know there's like this resistance that I feel toward women, particularly, there's always been women in film, like in the producer's chair, and some
or
of the
casting
most,
or makeup,
right.
Or editing, editing.
Oh yeah, every editor was a woman back in the day.
Yes.
It's the director's chair, I think, is the last bastion of resistance against this.
I think you know it started to change, but there is still so much resistance. And I made a pact with myself last year, as much as I love film, and I could spend, you know, all day watching film. I never get tired of it. I decided that I was only going to spend my time watching films that were either directed by a woman, written by a woman, or had a female DP on them, because I had spent, up to this point in my life, watched films, 99% of the films were all made by men, and I said, okay, I'm going to swing that pendulum over to the other side and make it a conscious effort on my part to do so. And it isn't easy. It isn't easy.
No, I mean, there just aren't that many women directors to watch. And
they're out there. I mean,
right.
Thankfully now there are many platforms on which to watch film.
Right. In terms of major theatrical releases, though, the percentage is still very small.
Right.
Although it is narrowing. And I think there's a lot of good talent out there. And I don't care what your gender is. Just make me a good movie.
Exactly.
You know, like if the movie's good, I'll watch.
Exactly.
Another thing we were talking before, so you worked with Richard LeMay on Dementia 13.
Yes, I did. Wonderful, talented, the talented, beautiful Richard LeMay.
Such a great guy. He came in, he was on the sixth episode of this show.
Really?
And before anybody had ever seen it.
Was this before Dementia?
No, it was just he had done Dementia and was working in post for Bloodbound. So he was working again, and I'm not sure that film is right now as we speak. But so he was telling me about the experience of that, and just a great guy. And let me ask you, because that's kind of a small. It was sort of indie-ish, even though it was
very indie.
It was for Universal,
mm-hmm.
But you know, Universal's the
distributor
on that, and yeah. Pipeline is producing it, and
yes.
You guys are working on, you know, not huge budgets.
It wasn't a huge budget. No, it was a low budget.
What was that experience like? First of all, tell me who you play in the film.
I play Gloria Halloran, the matriarch of a very wealthy family. And this film, Dementia 13, was a remake of Francis Ford Coppola's film, Dementia 13. And it's the only, I think we were the only people in the universe who have remade a Francis Ford Coppola film. And I think it's better.
Well, you know, to be fair, he made that movie in like 1962 for Roger Corman.
To be fair, with Roger Corman when he was on his crew.
Probably made it for like $10 over a weekend.
They did. It was 10 days. And as Roger Corman was like to do, finished his shoot over in Ireland and said, hey, I've got the location. I've got the crew for 10 more days. Somebody throw an idea at me. So Francis did and said, okay, there's... you know, a girl in a lake, and she gets stabbed or something. So that's how they did it, and they shot it in 10 days, I have read.
Wow.
So we took more than 10 days. We did it in a month.
Okay.
We shot it in a castle in Connecticut, and...
That's still... You're moving pretty quick.
We did.
You know...
It was pretty fast. We were...
So, and you play sort of one of the linchpins of that movie.
I am the linchpin.
As that...
I like to think I'm the star. I'm a scream queen now, and officially... And a scream queen, and I was not the last girl, but I was the last woman. The final woman.
the final woman left
the
alive.
The actress playing my daughter was the final girl, but I was the final woman.
I see.
I was the second to last to die.
So, you know, I always think, like, these pictures now, you know, that's a movie that can fit in there, because it seems like anything that's selling well theatrically mm-hmm. is either a $5 million or under horror movie.
Horror movies are so much fun.
And, you know.
So much fun. There's such an audience.
Yeah. And they always have an audience.
Always
have an audience. It's like either that or it's like a $150 million franchise film.
Yes.
And there is no in between.
There's no in between.
You know, which is unfortunate. And I'm
well, there is. And the women are making those films. So we just need to
But are people going to see those films?
Exactly.
And where are they seeing them? Where are
they
going to
see them?
Exactly.
So the distributors need to step up and say, okay. And I think they're doing it. It's just the trickle down effect. I think it's happening, but it's not happening fast enough.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, sort of being a woman director, but like you're also an actor.
Yes.
And so you made this film, 116, a short film.
Yes.
And it's This was your brainchild.
Did you see it?
I did see it. Okay. You did a lot. Your name is under a lot of titles.
Yes, I am. I did everything on it.
So,
because the budget was so small.
How do you feel about this? Because I'm seeing a lot of this now. I'm seeing a lot of actor turned director.
Yes.
Actor turned writer.
Yes.
Why is it so important now for actors to create their own material?
I think it always has been, and everybody I know has been doing this. Like I started, for instance, I started a theater company because I didn't like the roles that were available that were being produced for women on Broadway. How many women directors or writers are represented even today? So I think if you're a woman or a minority, it's absolutely necessary to do that. And I think people do that. I think actors have been doing that for some time, and especially now that there are so many platforms to show your work, you have to do that.
I think the key is just finding the right platform, because in a world of, you know, comic book movies, monster movies, and explosions and car chases and stuff,
yeah,
to try to find a little character-driven movie, mm-hmm. or, you know, something that's about people. If you look at, you know, what's going on right now, the biggest movies are like Avengers 4.
Well, those franchises.
You know, Jurassic Park.
Will always exist. And it is summer.
Yeah, but summer starts in February now.
It does.
You know, so to go out to the movies, and I think a lot of people are just going, well, you know, if you live in New York City, I'm not plunking down $17.50. You know, like it's not cheap to go see a movie. If you got a family,
try $25.
Really?
Can I say the name of the theater?
You can say it.
Landmark, the new Landmark on 57th.
Really?
$25. Yeah, it's a concierge.
Oh my God!
Like I was appalled at the price.
Do they do your laundry for you too, and park your car?
Pretty much. I would expect some personal services.
I hope them snacks are awesome.
Yeah.
For $25, I better be getting some awesome popcorn.
Yes. Waiter service to your chair.
Right. If
you're just serious about film, you just want to see good film all the time. Right. It's Angelica, and they took away, they took away Sunshine, and they took away Lincoln Plaza. They shut down on the same weekend, which was heartbreaking to filmmakers in New York.
There used to be all those places too that would do late run movies.
Yes.
Like you used to be able to go see a movie for like $5.
Yep.
And now that they've gone the way of the dodo. They're not in existence anymore.
Cinema East still does that.
Yeah, that's where
Cinema
they had
East
the Soho Film Festival.
Dementia 13, not the East Village one, but the other one.
Oh, okay.
Village East. Where Dementia 13 premiered, and where my film
awesome.
116 premiered exactly 1 month after Dementia 13.
Oh,
at
that's
the same
amazing.
Theater. It was. It was so.
Isn't it great to see your work on a big screen?
It is.
I think it's nothing more thrilling.
Such a difference.
There's nothing more frightening either. Like the first time it happened to me, I was like, oh my God, I should have cut this.
Because
thing.
You sit at the film festival like
yeah.
this, you
You're
know.
Just white
and then
knuckling
they,
it like
they
it's a roller
coaster.
They
didn't have the volume up all, you know, and it was just like.
Oh, the projection's always terrible. Like every film festival that I've ever been to with a short is always the projection
was
always terrible.
It was actually quite good. It's just like I just needed some more volume on it.
What do you think in terms of the landscape? Like, where do you think movies, you know, either movies about women or movies about just say people in general that are not big blockbusters or horror movies, where are they fitting right now?
I think there's always an audience for those films because I don't know if it's generational. I think that people always want to see that, but they want to see themselves reflected on screen. And that's why it's so important that women and minorities now are given green lights. I mean, just think for the 90-some years that the film industry has existed, women as a gender have been shut out. They were shut out. If you look at a film from just 10 years ago at the end credits, it's man, 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 woman doing hair makeup, man, 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 man. So, and it's now to me, now that I have been woke, it's infuriating. And that's why I don't go and see male-directed films anymore. I mean, occasionally I will, but because I've been giving myself such a steady diet of the female gaze, I now see that, I mean, think of all the stories that have not been told, whether it's a female story or an Asian story or, you know, an African-American story or an immigrant story. It's like, it's not just white men making these movies, and you have to open that up. You have to let us in, because I don't think an audience will keep feeding on this diet, this very exclusive diet of white bread. I think they, you know, I think we need to, the audiences are diverse, and I think the films need to reflect that.
Well, I think one of the big things earlier this year was Black Panther.
Yes.
Now, for all it was, you know, you say what you want about the movie itself, but it was showing like an African nation that had never been colonized.
I want to live there.
You know,
and I want to live there.
It was like nobody had ever seen that before.
No.
You know,
and why not?
And well, because it never. I mean, it's not part of our history. And it's not like there haven't been movies made by black directors with all black casts. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many Spike Lee, Tyler Perry type movies are there?
Sure.
But this was big because it went through the roof, because it was, you know, $200 million movie by the biggest franchise in
history. It was an
action film,
and it was an origin story.
Right.
And
it
was thrilling. I mean, it was thrilling.
And you had the same thing with
the
Wonder Woman, too. Like,
oh, my God.
You know, Wonder Woman was like, it was huge. Now, these are, like, we talk about being woke, but, like, these are still huge franchise movies by the two biggest studios in the world that are built to sell toys.
Yes.
And franchise more movies. You know, so it's not, they're not like these, you know, like, scrappy little engines that could kind of thing. They're huge monsters.
Yes.
But what it did show is that people will go to the movies.
They will.
You know, like, and not just, you know, like, and it doesn't just have to be, like, I loved Wonder Woman. Like, I thought it was terrific.
I saw it three times in the theater. Three times. You know. I sobbed through the first screening. I just sobbed because it was just so wonderful to see a female protagonist. Like, I didn't grow up with this. And and then the second time I went, it was like all the little boys and girls dressed like Wonder Woman in the audience. And I thought, oh, my God, this is... And then I sobbed again through the whole film because I thought all of these children will be able to grow up with this, and they will have this as their idols or something that they can aspire to. It's like, yes, women can be as powerful as men. And that was a huge message. And I think that's what was just so revelatory about it. It's like, yes, there's a whole 51% of the population out there that need this and will eat it up. And I think that's what the studios learned.
Yeah, I think it was a big lesson to everybody. The other thing that I liked about that movie in particular, and some of the other movies I've seen, like when I talked to Tammy Minoff on the show, I said this about her movie, is you had a strong female lead that did not diminish or make weak the male characters.
Not at all.
So, which I think has been a fault of female-led projects in the past, would be the player movie where you have a strong female lead, but she's only kind of strong in comparison because they've sort of weakened the men in some way, or they've, you know, like they've disabled the men in some way.
Because it was written by a man.
Not always.
Really?
Now, I've found that more often written by women, and I found a lot of strong women characters are written by men. I mean, you talk about Wonder Woman, that was written by three dudes, that movie. It was shepherded by a woman. Uh-huh. Patty Jenkins directed it. Mm-hmm. But that movie is written by Zack Snyder and two other guys.
Wow.
And the greatest comic books of Wonder Woman, if you've ever read the comic books, two dudes behind that. And they're both great writers.
Well, we're talking about superheroes, you know? Here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about archetypal stuff. It's not like these smaller movies that are just about, you know, like regular people. I mean, in your movie 116, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have no superpowers in it.
Well, I have that feminine mystique. I mean, that is my power, babe. I mean, come on. is my superpower.
But you don't lift a tank at any point in the film.
Yes, but I kept that sheet up.
I see.
I think we need to just a little clarification here. 116, it's a two-character. It's a two-hander. It's a man. It's an older woman and a younger man. The woman wakes up in the hotel room with a man in her bed, and she's not quite sure what happened. She wants him to leave, gets him to wake up. He doesn't want to go. And it's a story about power struggle. It's about role-playing, and it's about love. It's based on Shakespeare's sonnet 116, which is about ideal love, and it was always my favorite sonnet. When I decided to do the film, it originally was planned to be an immersive theater piece. That fell through, but I had already written this script, and I thought, oh my God, this is it's so visual, I have to make a film out of it. And the question of ideal love in this particular sonnet made me think, Well, it was written, you know, in the 16th century when there was no equality. And the question I asked myself, can you have equality in love if there's no equality between the people in love? And certainly between men and women, there was no equality. Women were property of men. If, in fact, 116 was written by Shakespeare about another man, which many people think it was, there was no equality for homosexuals in the 16th century. They were maybe, I don't know the laws, but I think they were probably put to death. And yet he still wrote about ideal love. So I thought, okay, what is ideal love about? Is it just an all-encompassing, unconditional love, or are there conditions? And I found that I interviewed a lot of people who are in couples and married, not married, but coupled with somebody, straight, gay, LGBT, whatever. And I found that there is always an alpha and always a beta. Someone is always in the dominant role. So I thought, okay, so that's not equal. So you can't really have equality in a relationship. So that's what my film is about. It's the woman has the power. It's a power struggle. Is it the power of love or the love of power that keeps two people together?
That's a good question. I got to wrap up shortly, but
we're not finished.
Well,
I haven't talked about my current project yet. Wait.
I'm gonna ask you about your upcoming stuff.
Okay.
So what do you have going forward?
I have just finished a full-length screenplay. I cannot say the name of it because I don't want to preempt any press releases, but it is historical. It's a drama, and it's about a witch hunt in the 17th century. And it has horror aspects to it because it's based on eyewitness accounts and the trial accounts, and there's a lot of research material that I found on it. And so I'm very excited about it, but like I said, I don't want to say anything about it yet.
It sounds cool. I'm always looking forward. I saw 116. I thought it was a really beautiful looking movie.
Thank you.
And I thought it was very well directed. And I know that you did like it. What I liked about it was it's a very like singular vision type film. So and you did a lot of the design and things like that.
I did.
And I thought I said, oh, this looks really good. Like this is a really good looking film.
I had a female majority crew. Mm-hmm. My great DP, Loretta Prevost, and my editor, Dina Alexander, we worked on that look. We came up with it together, and I think it has a beautiful look. I mean, the use of flashbacks in black and white, and it just and the whole color palette, and
It's really lovely.
Thank you.
And you're very good in the film as well.
Thank you.
Which is very tough to do. I've been on both sides of the camera myself. I don't think I'll ever do it again.
Yes, but did you do it naked?
No.
The characters in this film are not wearing any clothing through the entire film.
Which is easy on the costume budget.
Yes,
which is very good.
It was. We'll see. That was the point.
But the man
does eventually put his clothes on and leave. Spoiler alert.
For anybody just listening to the show, trust me, nobody wants me doing nude scenes. Anyway, I got to wrap up, but thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate
it. Jason, I hope you have me back.
When your new thing comes out,
yes.
Hit me up and we'll do this again.
Great.
And I will say thank you out there for joining us once again, taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more episodes of No Rest of the Weekend, you can always find them on our website, btrp.nyc/podcast. You can also find us on Anchor and iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all those fun places that you listen to podcasts. I'd like to thank my guest once again, Julia Campanelli.
My pleasure.
Thanks for coming. And thank you for joining us for Behind the Rabbit Productions. I'm Jason Godby, and I will see you next time.
See you again.